Hey everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. I hope everyone is enjoying their spooky October. I am having fun. I did a tour of one of the most haunted houses in New York over the weekend, and I've been watching a lot of movies, and Brooklyn Horror Film Fest was awesome. But yesterday, I had the pleasure of speaking with the legendary screenwriter Dennis Paoli about his newest movie, Suitable Flesh. We talked about the process for picking the Lovecraft story to adapt and getting it into the hands of Barbara Crampton to produce, and the big changes that they made when they translated the original story. This may be one of my all-time favorite conversations, and he gave some really good advice for aspiring screenwriters, too. So listen, keep listening for that. As always, please take a second to rate and review us wherever you listen, and let's get into my conversation with Dennis Paoli. Hey, Dennis, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
It's terrific to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you about Suitable Flesh, but the first thing I always ask my guests is, what's your favorite scary movie?
My favorite scary movie is Psycho. I'm a huge Hitchcock fan. I love the way he tells a story, the way he deconstructs, and the way he has no fear. You know, Stuart Gordon, my longtime collaborator and the great genius director I got to work with forever. And he was also, just spoiler alert, my best friend. I met him in high school, my college roommate. I miss him terribly. He always loved Hitchcock because he... If you know the story of Psycho, if you know the film, spoiler alert, who you think, the big name, you know, the big name actress, Janet Leigh, who you think the movie is going to be about, it's at the height of her career, gets the treatment halfway through the movie. And it was like, all of a sudden you go, I'm in a different movie entirely. This isn't the movie I thought I came to see. What movie, what's he showing me here? And it only gets more frightening from there. If he can do that to Janet Leigh, he can do it to you. So it's terrifying, but it's terrifying because Hitchcock is such a great filmmaker. And he was one of Stuart's heroes, and he was mine as well. And that's one of the modes in which we wanted to tell our stories.
Awesome. That's a great answer. How did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
I was a math and science kid in high school, but I love to read, and I love movies. I love going to movies. My parents always took us to whatever movie was current. So if you're a science and math kid and you love to read and you love movies, with the reading you do and the movies you go to are sci-fi and horror films. So I was, it was an early love of mine. And as I said, I knew Stuart Gordon in high school, and we were good students. He was the secretary of his graduating class, and I was an honors student. But every once in a while, we would cut class and go to the newest Hammer film that came out, and or the newest American International Poe adaptation. So we would, we'd go do that. So we developed our love of horror real early on.
Oh, that's amazing. That's such a good story. So as I said before, you're the writer of a new movie that's being released this Friday, October 27th, called Suitable Flesh. It's based on the 1937 H.P. Lovecraft story called The Thing on the Doorstep. Can you tell everyone what Suitable Flesh is about?
Well, that's a task and a half. I'll do my best. It's based on Lovecraft's The Thing on the Doorstep. If you really want to know what it is, let me advise you to read Lovecraft's The Thing on the Doorstep. It's one of his best stories. It's one of his best written stories, and it has more narrative to it than most of his fiction. And I know this because my day job for 49 years was I was a professor of English. I taught English Lit at Hunter College of the City University of New York, and I ran some writing programs. And one of the courses I taught was Gothic fiction. And for me, Lovecraft is one of the geniuses of American literature. He didn't write the way anybody else writes. He was a great impressionist. He gave you a few strokes and let you imagine the worst you could imagine. And that's what drew us to his stories. Because know what that means? That means he allows you to show it. He allows you to imagine it and show it for yourself. So where he was impressionistic, We were expressionistic, and that's what Suitable Flesh does. It expresses all the pent up sexual fears that Lovecraft buried in that story, all the terrible fear of the loss of one's identity, or of the loss of one's identity to insanity. Lovecraft lived with these fears his entire life, and he imbued all his fiction with these terrible fears that still speak to us today, if not more than in the past. So this story was about structured the dynamic of its fears into a mind swapping story. Oh no, wait, it's not just a mind swapping story, it's a body swapping story. Oh right, it's not just a body swapping story, it's a gender swapping story. And it gets madder and madder and madder as it goes along. And we just thought that was a terrific story to tell. And what happened over the years that we were writing and rewriting and trying to get that film produced, I'm talking about Stuart Gordon and I now, was that it only got more and more current, the fears of identity, the fears of insanity, the fears of gender, of the question of what makes one mentality one gender and another, were only grew more and more current and important in our culture. And so I was thrilled, even though we lost Stuart, I was thrilled that Barbara Crampton, who had been one of the terrific scream queens in the history of horror, and we were fortunate enough to work with a number of times in our films, has become a really first-class low-budget horror producer. She loved the script when we reconnected at a couple of Zoom memorials after Stuart was lost. We went a couple of Zoom memorials together, and she asked, "Do you have a script in the drawer?" And I pulled that out and sent it to her, and she was thrilled with it. And then she connected Joe Lynch with it, who made the last twist, which refreshed the whole story for me, the last gender switch, which refreshed the whole story for me, allowed me to tell it in an entirely new way, made it shiny and sparkle again. And we're pretty happy with it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Why did you choose the story in particular this time?
Well, Stuart loved it because it had more story value to it. The character, it was three characters interacting almost as if it were a stage play. And Stuart was a stage director, a very successful stage director before he was a film director. And he loved working with actors, and he could really see actors getting deep into these roles. So he was connected to it, and he just turned me loose on it and said, investigate this, you know, reimagine the story as fully as you can, which I tried to do. And it came out really, it just got more and more interesting the more and more you developed the psychological permutations that it could take place. One of the big changes I made was to make one of the characters a therapist. That's not in the original story. But since the story is about identity and the issues of identity and sanity and the issues of the fear that one is going insane, and central to Freudian therapy is the idea of transference, where the patient transfers the core source of their fear, the relationship that is causing them the most fear, from their life to their relationship with their therapist. That was the core of what was going on in Lovecraft's story. And it worked so well. And it served to both humanize it at the one point, give the characters new perspectives, but also to bring it into a more current mode. We were able to contemporize it. So once that worked, boom, we were off. And the story started to tell itself. I always say that you know the characters are working when they start telling you what they're mm-hmm. going to say. And that happened with this. I was really happy about that.
Oh, that's incredible. And did the idea for this script come before the pandemic? I think it has been a while. Yeah.
I first started working on this script in the mid-late 90s.
Oh, okay. Uh,
And it got, Stuart liked it when he was working on a couple of movies in Europe. And when he came back, I showed him the script. He liked it. He put his producer hat on. He tried to get it produced. It got optioned, but it didn't get made. We tweaked it. It got optioned again in the early 2000s, but it didn't get made. Some actors, we tweaked it again. Some actors in around 2005, 2006 really liked it. They optioned it, but they couldn't get it made. And all three times that it was optioned and not made, we got the same note back from prospective producers who turned it down. And the note was the same every time. We can't do it because of, and I'll let you guess what that was. And so I just put it in a drawer. And then when I reconnected with Barbara at the memorials, the online memorials for Stuart Gordon after he passed away early in the pandemic, she said, "You have anything? You have a script to show?" I pulled it out, showed it to her, and she loved it. She connected Joe to it. Joe gave his ideas into the process, and the rest is on screen. But for any of you screenwriters out there, there's an object lesson in that. If it's a good story, it'll last. And it will find its way to production if it possibly can. So don't give up on your stories. If you believe in them, you know, put them in a drawer, but every once in a while, take them out, blow the dust off, and see if you can find a new way to tweak it, a new perspective to give it, and show it around again. The good story stays a good story no matter how long it hasn't been done.
Oh, that's such good advice. So as you hinted at before, the two main characters were originally men, and then Joe Lynch asked you to rewrite the script to make it two female characters. What was it like rewriting the script from the point of view of two women? Did anything significant change?
Well, let's see. Did anything significant change? Everything? yeah. You know, actually, that's not true. The structure of the original story, which made me aware of how powerful the original story was. But the structure of the original story, the dynamic of the struggle between identities becoming a struggle between genders, which is there in the original story, it's just turned around the other way. This is the mirror image of it, still worked really well. And it gave me great confidence in the adaptation of the original story itself. But I had to be brave in writing two major female characters, although one of the three characters in Lovecraft is one of his few and really fascinating female characters. He didn't give himself enough credit to write female characters. He could really do it. He just was afraid of it. I tried to be brave, and you know, and spoiler alert, I'm a guy, so I had to be I had to be aware. You know, and so one of the things we did was involve Barbara Crampton, the producer, into the process. Producers always muscle their way into the process, whether the writer and director want them there or not. But we welcomed her in. One, we know her really well. Two, we've worked with her before and love the process. And three, she is, after all, the producer. So we engaged her in the process, and she was terrific. She helped us, you know, she helped us be aware and fair as we went. And also to try to be as honest as we could in telling the story that we wanted to tell. So there's another lesson for screenwriters, is embrace your collaborators. Try to find the best collaborators you can find. I've been really lucky in my career to work with geniuses and people who love what they do. But, you know, listen to your collaborators. They're not always right, but listen to them, because sometimes they can give you a perspective that changes everything and for the better. So that's what we hope happened here, and we think it did.
Yeah, definitely. Barbara Crampton is such an icon. Yeah, I loved her in this. So
you know, one more thing about Barbara. Not only has she progressed from being a scream queen to, you know, first-rate producer, and I've worked with some good ones, but doesn't she look exactly the same as she looked in 1984? It's, you know, she made some deal with some demon to, you know, I mean, she is, and you know, her work has always been spectacular. She's one of my favorite actresses. And again, so fortunate that she's, when I hear her say my lines, I'm so proud. But she just looks terrific to this day. Yeah. She just looks great.
Did you have an interest in psychology before you started writing this?
To some degree, when you study, when I went from being, I was a math and science major in high school and when I started college, and then I moved over to became a film and then an English major because I was interested in storytelling, because that just sort of took over. And I learned along the way that I wasn't a mathematician. I was a guy who liked math, but when you're around mathematicians, they're a different order of human being. You know how athletes can do things you can't do?
Yeah.
Mathematicians can think things you can't think. So I went into something that I also loved, which was cultural storytelling. And I, you know, wanted to just tell the stories that I loved the best that I could. And what was the question again?
Did you have an interest in psychology before writing the script?
How do you get to psychology from there, right? Well, when you study literature, you study everything.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want to know how characters work, you have to study the psychology of the day. Read Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Imp of the Perverse, which was Stewart's favorite story. Okay. And we also did some Poe adaptations because we loved Edgar Allan Poe. And he's one of the unsung heroes of American literature, I think. And in The Imp of the Perverse, it starts out being an essay on psychology, which turns into a story about madness. It's a brilliant little piece of work. But notice, Poe was interested in the psychology of his day. If you're interested in horror on the one hand or humor on the other, you're interested in the human psyche, in how it works, in how we rationalize the irrational. And so it was always there hovering over my work. It was always there hovering over the works that I loved. So at some point along the way, I said, you know, I got to read about this. So I started reading Freud start to finish. And you don't get all, there's a lot of Freud. You don't get all the way. And that branches out into much more current things. And, you know, and every once in a while, you find yourself in therapy. It took me a long time to get there. But once I did, it was so worthwhile. And, you know, and I learned a lot in that process as well.
Oh, that's great. When you have free time again, you should definitely check out Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix, which is based on Poe's work.
Yes, I have. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. There have been several versions of that are wonderful. I heard a radio version. I can't remember who did it, but I heard a radio version once that was spectacularly good. It's a wonderful story.
Oh, wow. So back to Suitable Flesh. How did the cast come together? Heather Graham in particular was such an interesting choice.
Joe loves Heather. Joe knew Heather. Joe asked Heather, and she just happily said yes. And ain't she great? You know, everybody in this film, and I want to give a shout out to Judah Lewis too, who's young and spectacularly good in it. Everybody in this film, it plays more than one person.
Yeah.
And they have to do it convincingly. They have to, they have to do it perfectly for you to get it. It's a very demanding film of its audience, which means it's a very demanding film of its director and its actors. And the actors are terrific. They do a wonderful job. When you're doing mind swapping, body swapping, and gender swapping, that's the full Monty. That's your plate is full as an actor. And they just, it's a feast for them. They feast on these roles and do a great job. You know, let me throw Bruce Davison in there too. He's got maybe the maddest swap of all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they do, we challenged the actors. The script challenges the actors, you know, in we hope the same way that the original story challenged the characters. And they were more than up to it. They were terrific.
Yeah, they're all really incredible. Now, I know you based this on an H.P. Lovecraft story, but did any horror movies provide inspiration while you were writing the script for Suitable Flesh?
You know, to some degree, Carpenter's The Thing, you know, where the thing goes from character to from character to character to character. To some degree, that's sort of one of Lovecraft's basic fears, was that he had a thing in him. That he had a thing, if not in him, he had a thing in his genetic past. And that's inherent in Carpenter's telling of that story. And, you know, it's Yeah, you know, ours is a much different story told in a much different way. For one, it's not at the South Pole, but it's, you know, and that's a full male story, you know. So, you know, but on the other hand, it's the same thing. It's the same core fear. And I wanted to get to that, you know, when you're working in carpenter mode, when you're working, you know, in inspired by Carpenter, you go all the way. And we wanted to go as far as we could.
I love that. I'm just curious, what subgenre in horror would you classify as suitable flesh in?
Well, it's a mind and body swapping movie.
Okay.
You know, there's a number of those, you know, that's a subgenre of its own.
Okay. Name.
But it's also, and if you talk to Joe Lynch, he'll tell you the same thing. It's also a neo-noir. It's a noir film.
Yeah.
It's a modern color noir film. And we hope that it, you know, it tells a mystery story as well. And, you know, we wanted it to be engagingly mysterious along the way as well. And to have characters having to deal with their own dark sides, which is very much there in Lovecraft. So to some degree, it has noir elements, which Joe in his filmmaking is perfectly suited for. Mm-hmm. Notice that Guillermo del Toro is telling noir stories now. He's moved his horror background into noir storytelling. You know, sort of, if you work in horror, you discover that those genres overlap.
Oh, yeah.
And we wanted that element to come out as well.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of a spicy and sexy story too.
It's very is.
And then that's there. Yeah. Joe knows how to handle that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is very spicy. So this isn't your first time adapting H.P. Lovecraft. Why are you so drawn to his work? I know you touched on it a little bit before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause he's a genius and I like working with geniuses because he allows you to imagine, he makes you imagine. And we are in our work always we want to engage the audience with what we imagine and hope that it helps them. It awakens their imaginations. Lovecraft is very suggestive. And we took that as license. If you're suggesting something to us, we're going to do it. We've always done our best to do it up as well as we possibly could. Plus, Lovecraft reaches back into a whole mythology that the stories bring with them without having, if you just put his name above the title, there's a fan base out there that understands your movie in a deeper and more profound way that connects to a mythology of cosmic horror that adds to your film as long as you remain faithful to the spirit of Lovecraft, which we hope we did.
Definitely. I have two questions left. I read in Fangoria that this takes place in the same universe as Reanimator. Is that true?
Yes, it is. Oh. And there are Easter eggs or cookies in the film that will remind you of Reanimator. It takes place, to some degree, it takes place in the same universe as From Beyond, which to some degree took place in the same universe as Reanimator. They all take place in Arkham, Massachusetts, Lovecraft's environment of choice. They all take place connected to Miskatonic University and the hospital at Miskatonic University Hospital. And they all involve characters. And there are a couple of characters that roll over from one film to the next. They all involve characters who work and create in that environment. So there are a lot of cookies and Easter eggs there. Look for them, fans. But also, it's a way of staying in the Lovecraft universe and engaging not only with his fans, but being fair to his legacy as a storyteller.
Oh, that's so fun. I hope everyone can spot those. So thank you so much for being here. Good luck with Suitable Flesh. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. This is great. No, good questions. Good.
Good thank time. You so much.
Yeah, I had a good time. I had a good time here. And, you know, let's do this again. So, you know, watch for the next one. Let's do this again.
Yes, I would love to. That'd be great. Wait, are we going to get a stage adaptation of Suitable Flesh?
Oh, my goodness. What a question. I don't know. I don't know off the top. You know, that's a question for the producers. But, you know, for me, it's another job, work for hire. I'm down. I'm ready whenever they are. You know, that's terrific. Oh, thank you. You know.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Take care.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dennis Paoli, and thanks again to Dennis for coming on. Suitable Flesh will be available in theaters and everywhere you rent movies on October 27th, 2023. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC, and if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.